Welcome back to TechNet Radio. Harold Wong welcomes Principal Program Manager Jeff Woolsey to the show as they discuss the Microsoft Virtual Machine Converter, as well as dig deep into why changes were made around the virtual switch for Windows Server 2012 and how to manage and implement various extensibility points in your environment. Harold, the mic is yours.
Welcome to another episode of TechNet Radio Virtualization and Cloud Experts Cafe. I'm Harold Wong with Microsoft, and I'm an IT evangelist. With me today, I do have a special guest, and his name is Jeff Woolsey. I'm going to go ahead and let Jeff introduce himself. I think everybody does know who he is, though, if you worked with Hyper-V at all in the last few years. But Jeff, welcome, and give a quick introduction of yourself, if you could.
Thanks, Harold. Yeah, I'm Jeff Woolsey. I'm a Principal Program Manager in the Windows Server and Cloud Division. I've been focused on virtualization now for over 15 years in a variety of different roles, and I'm really happy to be here, really excited to be here to talk about Windows Server 2012 and Hyper-V.
Okay, well, thank you very much for setting some time aside. We've had a lot of questions and a lot of interest on the product, and so hope you can answer a few questions or kind of dig into a few areas. The first one is around the scenario where there's a lot of customers who are running a competitive product, we'll just come out and say it, VMware, and they're actually really, really considering moving over to Hyper-V, but they need a tool to get them from where they are today to Hyper-V. So can you kind of give us an idea of some tools available, hopefully free, because that's the one I keep getting asked, that can help these customers?
Yeah, so there's actually a couple parts to this. First of all, you know, we look at, you know, certainly we want to provide tools to make it easy to convert, for example, from legacy virtualization platforms to Hyper-V and Server 2012. But before we even provide the tools, one of the things we want to do is make sure we actually provide some tools to help you locate those in your infrastructure. So one thing I should point out before we even talk about the conversion process is we also have what we call the Microsoft Assessment and Planning Toolkit. And new in version 7, which was released a few weeks back, is the ability for it to look throughout your infrastructure and find, for example, VMware VMs, and it will provide you a list of VMware VMs that would make great candidates to migrate over Hyper-V. Now, let me also start out by saying one of the things I always get asked is, hey, Jeff, are you going to come talk to me and come into my infrastructure and tell me I should go rip out everything I have and rip out my investment? And in fact, that's what I never tell people to do. I'm always very clear. I understand that, you know, if you've already made an investment in another virtualization platform, you know, you may have training in there, you've made an investment, financial, and you have that investment. But what we're seeing pretty much nonstop and across the board is people may have their VMware that they've been using in the past, but now they're just sitting up Server 2012 and Hyper-V right next to it. And I've had many people say, look, I'm done paying the taxes for the other guys. I'm already deploying Windows Server 2012 everywhere. I'm a huge Windows Server shop, so why aren't I taking advantage of Hyper-V? It makes all the sense in the world. And so what we're seeing is people are setting up, they're deploying it, especially after they see all of the new capabilities in Server 2012, which is it's almost an embarrassment of features that we have, whether it's storage, whether it's networking, whether it's virtualization. It's just across the board, PowerShell management, automation, you name it. Server 2012 is really a generational leap in our server platform. And so because of that, you know, we're seeing people that are quickly adopting Server 2012. And so they're setting up Hyper-V right next to it. They're setting up, you know, their platform for cloud. They're doing all of that. And then over time, as they deploy more and more, then people are starting to ask us, well, what about those things that I am running on VMware? Can I start, you know, migrating those over? And so we're introducing, in fact, we launched this a few weeks back, is the new MVMC, or the Microsoft Virtual Machine Conversion Tool. And what MVMC does is actually, first of all, our goals were very simple. We spoke with customers and they said, look, we want an easy-to-use tool. We want it to be very simple. Certainly, we'd like the ability to automate it and do a whole bunch of these. But at the same time, we'd also like a simple, easy-to-use wizard, you know? And so that's exactly what we've developed. The MVMC is about a 4 megabyte download. Again, megabyte is very, very small. You download it, and you literally have a wizard. So you double-click on it, and you can point it at a vCenter server, or you can point it directly at an ESX server. And we support all the way back to vSphere 4.x. We support vSphere 5 and vSphere 5.1. And basically, you point it at a vCenter server or an ESX server, and basically, it'll give you a laundry list of all the virtual machines that you've pointed the tool at. And what it will do is it will live online convert those from VMware to Hyper-V. And I should point out that this is really a full virtual machine conversion. It's not just a disk conversion. There have been tools out there by numerous third parties, and I've seen them. There's a whole bunch of free tools out there that allow you to convert from VMware to Hyper-V. But in most of these cases, they do just the disk conversion. So they take a VMDK and they convert it to a VHD. But then you have to go recreate the configuration of that virtual machine. So for example, how many processors did it have? How much memory did it have? What does network configuration look like, et cetera, et cetera? In addition, you have to go and you have to remove the drivers installed by other third-party platforms, and you have to install our integration services. Well, with the MVMC, we automate all of this. So first of all, your virtual machine is running. We will uninstall all of the drivers, all of the integration components from VMware. We will convert the virtual machine, convert the disk, move all of the virtual machine configuration to Hyper-V, and then we'll install the integration services into the virtual machine so that it's set up for Hyper-V. So it really is a very comprehensive and complete solution, but we've also made it very easy to use. And so we've just released it a few weeks ago, but we're seeing quite a bit of buzz about it. A number of people have blogged about it and started using it. And so again, that's the Microsoft Virtual Machine Converter. That's the MVMC.
You know, so Jeff, thank you. That was a very, very detailed, in-depth discussion and explanation of that whole scenario. And I really, really appreciate that.
Oh, my pleasure.
I don't think people really take the time to think about it like you just explained, right? So I'm glad you did that. In terms of the conversion process that you just explained, is there downtime then? While I'm converting that VM off of the VMware platform, if it's going to uninstall the VMware components, is there a little bit of downtime, or does it do that technically on the conversion side?
Great question. So one of the things that we have as a configurable option during the conversion is how you want to perform the conversion. So you're gonna have a VMware virtual machine running, but you can determine when you're doing the conversion, how do you want this to actually occur? Do you want the target to keep running? Do you want the source to keep running, or do you want the source when it's done to turn itself off and start running on the target? You can actually configure whether the source and target are running, are enabled or disabled. Because there could be cases where you say, you know what, just to be safe, I'm going to keep everything running and I'm going to convert it to a VM and I'm going to have the VM running offline. Or you could just try it. You could also have it running online, and when the conversion is done, you could have the target run online. So it's really a configuration that's left up to the end user, depending on what their requirements are. So we wanted it to also be flexible as well.
Awesome. That's good news, right? Because I know a lot of people don't necessarily want to turn that off in terms of the source before the target's up. But at least this gives them flexibility, right, in terms of what they want to do.
Yes. We certainly expect there's going to be some downtime. I don't want to create an illusion this is a completely alive process. There will be a little bit of downtime, but we, again, want to provide the flexibility and choice. And as if you were doing any sort of operation like this, you want to make sure that you provide some time to do this. So it's not exactly live, but it's very close to live.
Okay. Then one last question on the MVMC before we move on to the next topic is VMware the only, I guess, non-Hyper-V platform we can move VMs from? Will it do others, including, say, Microsoft Virtual Server from way back in the old days?
Oh, my goodness, from way back in the olden days. No, this is specifically targeted at VMware because we actually have conversion tools. We've had conversion tools in the past to do other ones. And honestly, folks that had been using Virtual Server in the long, long ago, I think we've actually captured most of them and upgraded them very easily to Hyper-V because they wanted to take advantages of the new capabilities that we've had in Hyper-V for many, many years. So we didn't think that was really much of a priority.
Okay, I just thought I'd ask because
Yeah.
I know that product is probably still out there somewhere, just like Windows 3.1 is probably still out there somewhere, right?
Oh, first of all, I don't think there's too much 3.1 out there. And then honestly, in case of virtual server, I don't think there's much of that out there as well, because honestly, we made it very simple way back when to move people to Hyper-V. And it has just continued to grow in very large numbers and double-digit growth for Hyper-V over the years. So we're seeing some very fast adoption. And with Server 2012, we're seeing the adoption grow even faster.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I see that all the time as I talk to people. Okay, so then let's just switch topics and go to another high important topic, or a topic that a lot of people are asking questions about in Server 2012 Hyper-V, and that's around virtual switch. So we're switching topics of switches, and I want to kind of dig into a little bit about what we did there, because in the new version, it's a totally extensible virtual switch. And I know we've partnered with some vendors out there. And I just wanted to kind of let you talk about this environment a little bit and give us a little bit of why we chose to go down this path.
Yeah, and honestly, I think the why is actually a very important part. It's actually something I like to focus on when I'm really talking with customers, so they understand the design decisions and choices we made behind the scenes before we actually create and develop a feature. There was a lot of discussion about how we wanted to develop the virtual switch in Server 2012. And there are a couple of different ways you can implement a virtual switch. One of the things that VMware does, for example, is they create a closed replaceable switch. So in the case of VMware, you can use their built-in switch, or if you want, you can replace it with the Cisco Nexus 1000V. And for if you're a Cisco shop, it makes all the sense in the world. But it means it's one or the other. And we certainly could have done that. We actually had a lot of discussion internally about the types of decision we could make. And we certainly said, yeah, we could do a closed replaceable switch. That's a pretty no-brainer. But the more we looked into it and the more we kind of understood, the power in the virtual switch, the more we realized this is actually a place that we want to ensure we have a rich and vital ecosystem for innovation. So instead of going with the closed replaceable switch, we actually went with an open and extensible switch. And the reason why we did this was really two things governing our thinking was flexibility and choice. We know, for example, not if you're in a branch office, then the Cisco Nexus 1000V could be kind of overkill. If you're in a huge data center, certainly you're going to want, some of those types of capabilities. But we also know that people want to be able to mix and match based on their own business requirements. So in the extensible switch, there's really three places you can plug in. And this is one of those cases where I wish I had a whiteboard in front of me so I could kind of show this off. But mentally, if you think about a flow going, think of a line going from up and down, and if you look at the top, we have basically three places you can plug into the extensible switch. The topmost part is what we call capture extensions. So if I just want to, for example, monitor packets as they go across the switch, I just want to see what's going on across. I want to just, monitor what's going across the switch. We can do that. And in fact, there's S-Flow by Inmon that's publicly available, plugs right into the extensible switch if you just want to do some simple packet monitoring. If you want to do something more interesting than that, you can plug in a layer below that into what we call the Windows Filtering Platform, or WFP. And here is honestly where you can really go to town if you're a developer or if you want to do all sorts of interesting things. With the Windows Filtering Platform, you can insert packets, you can drop packets, we can filter packets, you can modify packets, you can literally go to town here. And this is the ideal place, for example, to drop in things like firewalls, intrusion detection, anti-malware. And in fact, there's a number of folks plugging in here. One of them, for example, is our friends over at Five9. Five9 has had a firewall for Hyper-V in the market now, and they've now actually just delivered their 2.0, which plugs right into the extensible switch in Server 2012, and they're taking advantage of the Windows filtering platform. And there are plenty of others that are getting ready to make announcements that are plugging in here as well, but Five9 is the one that I can talk about today. And then finally, if you get below that, so again, there are three. If you're looking at a line, there's three spots in the stack you can plug in. There's capture extensions at the top, the Windows filtering platform in the middle, and then finally at the very bottom, we have what we would call forwarding extensions. And here in the forwarding extensions is where the Cisco Nexus 1000V plugs in. So if you are a Cisco shop and you want to be able to manage your virtual switches in the same way you manage your Cisco physical switches, then you can use the Cisco Nexus 1000V that plugs right in here into the forwarding extensions for Hyper-V, and you can manage your virtual and your physical switches using the same management tools that you're used to managing your Cisco physical platform. In addition, if you're not a Cisco shop, for example, in Asia Pacific and in many parts of Europe, OpenFlow is gaining a lot of popularity. Well, NEC is developing an OpenFlow switch plugin as well. So immediately you can see that it's not just, hey, the Hyper-V switch or some other option. It's actually multiple options. So there's S-Flow, there's NEC, there's Cisco, there's Five9, and there's more on the way. In addition, you can also mix and match. So if I decide I'd like to do a capture extension at the top and I'd like to use the Cisco Nexus 1000 at the bottom, you can actually use these together simultaneously. So it gives you flexibility and choice. And then finally, to me, the creme de la creme, the thing that really makes this super cool is, well, guess what? If you decide, you know what, these are all really cool, but I have something that I think is completely unique to my infrastructure. I want to be able to, you know, I want to monitor or look for a specific packet sequence. I'm looking something that nobody else cares about but me. I can write my own extension into the virtual switch. So not only do I have partners out there delivering it, but you can also create your own. And on top of that, because Hyper-V is built into Windows 8 client, your developers could actually write a switch extension on their tablet or on their laptop or on their desktop running Windows 8, develop that extensible switch, and deploy it onto server, because anything you create on Hyper-V and client is compatible with server. So whether it's VMs or PowerShell automation or the extensible switch, that can be moved over to server. So that's a very powerful set of features, and that really kind of, you know, covers, you know, how we think about the extensible switch. So we really think we've delivered a very different solution and a very forward-thinking and a future-proofing your virtualization solution through the networking, because, you know, we're going to have more and more people delivering and plugging into the virtual switch ecosystem we've created.
Oh, once again, a great description of where you can plug in and how that architecture works. I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Is it simple to manage this environment, right? If I want to take advantage of like you were talking about, the Five9 solution, mm-hmm. is it easy to incorporate that in? And then is it a Hyper-V manager kind of integration point, or is it PowerShell? Or, I mean, how do I go about managing these extensibility components?
That's a great question, and I can tell you right now, I have to be careful because I don't want to speak for another company. I know what Five9's working on. They're doing some really awesome stuff in this regard, but I don't think it's publicly announced, and I can't get into that right now. So let me just say this. We've designed it to be extensible. Folks can run, there's a variety of different ways that they can manage, but we've designed it to be very extensible and very pluggable, especially when you look at holistically how we think about management. Hyper-V, it's really through System Center and more specifically Virtual Machine Manager. So on top of all the things we're delivering in Server 2012, System Center is, you know, we think of both Windows Server and System Center together is really our solution for private cloud. So, you know, very often someone will ask me, hey, I've deployed Windows Server and I've deployed Hyper-V. Does that mean I have cloud? It means you have the potential, you have the infrastructure for cloud and you have the potential for cloud, but really you need to have systems management to go along with that. And that's where System Center comes in.
Okay. Well, thank you for answering that question. I know that there are certain pieces as well. Once you get things configured, like to turn on the ability to grab packets from a particular VM, right? There are settings on that particular VM that
Yes.
you can go in and turn that on and off, right? So at least there are certain things I know for sure that are in Hyper-V Manager in terms of basic settings.
Yes, and keep in mind, so everything I've just talked about, that, you know, that's one goal of the extensible switch is for people to be able to add value to the switch and provide new capabilities. But at the same time, I should also point out that the virtual switch itself, what we provided in the box with Server 2012, is also the most advanced switch in the market. So we added a whole bunch of new capabilities to the built-in switch itself. If you look at what we've had in Server 2008 R2 Hyper-V in the past, the virtual switch in the past was a relatively simple unmanaged switch. It offered VLAN capabilities, but it was a very, very basic unmanaged switch. In Server 2012, the built-in virtual switch offers so much more. For example, yeah, there's VLANs, but now we've got private VLANs. We've got the ability to do quality of service. So if you want to do bandwidth shaping, you want to be able to do and deliver networking that meets a service level agreement. Quality of service is built in there. We've also introduced SRIOV, which is single root I/O virtualization, which is a way to deliver phenomenal performance into a Hyper-V VM. I'm talking, you know, if you want to run, you know, 10 gigabit NICs and get 10 gigabit performance in a VM, or actually team multiple 10 gigabit NICs into a VM, we can do that and deliver line rate performance in a virtual machine and do all of this with live migration. So, you know, not only did we, you know, make the switch extensible, but we've added a whole bunch of new capabilities into the built-in switch, and we've also enhanced it with some security capabilities and a whole bunch of new things that, honestly, we could continue on for quite a while.
Well, no, and I appreciate it. I know this is a topic that, like you said, we'd probably spend 2 hours on, right, and still only be scratching the surface.
Mm-hmm.
So I know you have limited time, and I want to respect your time because you're a busy, busy man. So with that, I do want to say thank you again. I'm going to go ahead and bring an end to this particular session. I believe we have you scheduled to record another episode or two in the future, so we'll go ahead and tap into you at your next available time slot to talk about maybe Hyper-V Server 2012. What do you think?
Great. That sounds great, Harold. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And thank you, everyone, for joining us for this episode of TechNet Radio. And we will see you next time around.